For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back! Ah! At the buzzer!
Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everybody? Sam Franco, Chris Brame, back at it again. Another episode of the crossover here on 960theref.com. Plenty to get to on this week's episode. The SEC spring meetings going on in the beautiful locale of Destin, Florida. Always a fun spring break trip back in the day for yours truly, but business is at hand down in Destin right now. Also, we can talk about the brawl that happened between the Giants and the Nationals with Bryce Harper, and the NBA Finals start up. We're recording this on Thursday, so they start up tonight. So we'll give you a little preview when you hear this tomorrow. You know, obviously game one will have happened, but I don't think the result of game one is super important to this series. Although I will say that if Golden State wins, then it might be a long series for Cleveland. You would think they need to grab one there to help make this series a good one. But we'll get to that a little later. Brame, spring meeting's going on right now. It makes you feel like football is that much closer.
Yeah, and they, you know, like you said, they're down there in Destin, fun in the sun, probably a little golf. It just makes me, you know, fear for those other sports because there's never any money. And they'll have no money, but the ADs and the commissioner, you know, they can't meet in an office in Birmingham. They have to go to Destin.
Of course.
So, but other than that, there's no money.
And one of the funny things that has been brought up here, and there's a lot of topics being discussed, I think a lot of the coaches are still trying to jockey for position in terms of the early signing period that's been kind of signed in here that'll be sort of towards the latter part of December. So that's kind of been one thing. But a really interesting thing that has come out of this is Commissioner Sankey kind of just talking to the media and mentioning that – the possibility, at least, of somewhere down the line, Auburn joining the SEC East. And it would make a lot of sense, I think, just geographically, if you shifted Auburn to the East and you put Missouri in the West. Obviously, it would change some things in terms of the way certain series are played. Georgia and Auburn would still play every year, and that would become a division game. And I would assume you would have to switch it to where Alabama, their permanent team that they play from the East every year would have to be Auburn, although what does that do to the Tennessee series that they play all the time? So,
yeah, I know, and that's why I just think divisions need to be scrapped. Let's just get rid of them. Yeah, I mean, it would make sense to move some of them around, but we don't have them in either basketball anymore, and that seems to be fine. Both women right. And men have scrapped their divisions.
So would you just have the top two teams then play in the title game, kind of like what the Big 12 is going to do? And the Big 12, and Dave has hit on this on the morning show a bunch, the Big 12 will have a rematch in their title game because every team plays every team.
Which is why they've actually moved Bedlam up to the beginning of November this year to avoid having the, you know, I guess a strong possibility that Oklahoma and Oklahoma State could have played 2 weeks in a row.
Right, because if Auburn were to move to the East, then in theory you could have an Iron Bowl and then, like, the next week you would have an Auburn-Alabama rematch in a possible SEC title game scenario. So that game would need to be moved. But I kind of agree with what you're saying here. If you just get rid of divisions, that way you can still have games that you play every year, like Georgia and Auburn, Alabama and Auburn, Alabama and Tennessee. Those games can still be around. Then you just kind of rotate around the rest. Maybe you set it up to where instead of having one permanent cross-division opponent, if you get rid of divisions, you just say – there are two teams every year that you will be playing.
Right.
And Georgia would probably be Florida and Auburn. And then the rest of them, you know, fall where they may.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could even go farther and have, say, there's five permanent rivals for every school. And then, let's in a perfect world, we can expand the conference schedule to nine games. And then you rotate the other four schools.
That's actually a good idea.
Right. And then those teams come, you basically every 4 years, you're playing every team at least at home. And so every class, essentially, a guy that's a freshman that stays through his senior year is going to face, you know, theoretically every team in the SEC. But, yeah, I mean, you point out, too, a side effect of moving Auburn to the East, then the Iron Bowl would not be the last weekend of the season anymore.
No.
And, you know,
and it's such a great game in that spot. You know, you got Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It's just like I know that sometimes rivalries are played earlier in the season, like Texas-Oklahoma has always been earlier in the season. But that weekend in college football is so special.
Sure. But, I mean, the where Texas and Oklahoma play, it's a tradition that mm-hmm. coincides with the Texas State Fair.
Right.
And that's what the Iron Bowl is. It's a tradition where it's been. And, you know, all of a sudden to have that game move to, what are you playing it, late
October,
early November. Then when does Alabama and LSU play? I mean, it's just they're sucking all the all the tradition out of the sport, which is a big reason why it's so wildly popular anyway, because of its customs. But, there's just the short-sighted, cash grab that we've seen here lately that's changed a lot of that around with the expansion that we've gotten. But what blows me away about this whole Auburn talk is it essentially, I feel like it started with Pat Dye.
Right.
So, I mean, why are we like, I mean, why is something like Pat Dye said suddenly becoming something that the commissioner of the SEC is even bothering with?
Right, well, that's the thing. When Pat Dye says it, that's one thing, and I think it was Seth Emerson on DogNation.com who had a story about this, basically saying, look, this isn't happening. I wouldn't go that far, because if the commissioner is talking about it, then that means that it's at least in the discussion. You know, the commissioner's not going to voluntarily talk about this with the media without it being something that, you know, at least is potentially being considered.
Well, I haven't seen what he said. Did he? I mean, he addressed it, but by talking about it, he didn't say like, no, this is never going to happen.
Right. He didn't say, he didn't concrete, or he didn't like flat out say this is or isn't happening. I mean, it was just something that is in the discussion. And for Georgia's purposes, I mean, I think it would be fine. I mean, it would just turn that into a division game, and it would do a little bit to help even out the conferences a bit, or the divisions a bit, rather, just because there has been a dominance from the SEC West, although last year it was really just Alabama and no other team in the conference won more than, what, 8 games? So,
yeah, I mean, 8-4 Auburn went to the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, so that's the thing. It was really just Bama dominant, but in the past, at least recent history, Alabama and the rest of the West have been a lot better than the East. So you push Auburn to the other side, and it's certainly something you could do to mix up the competitive balance. But I like what you were saying. Just scrap divisions all the way around, have the top two teams play for the SEC championship. You don't have to have divisions to do that.
Right, and you wouldn't necessarily have a rematch in the SEC, because we're not talking about playing 13 conference
right.
games. You definitely are playing everyone. The Big 10 only has the 10, or the Big 12 only has the 10 teams, so that's what they're left with. But, it's a reaction to what Alabama's doing right now. I mean, Auburn could say, like, you know what, we got to get out of Alabama's shadow because they're dictating how we run our business, and, you know, we can't beat them because Nick
Saban's
there.
Well, it's like what A&M did by coming to the SEC in the first place. They were tired of being Texas's little brother.
Yeah.
And so they jumped ship, and I totally agree with you. If Auburn were to try to, at least, like you said, get out from under Bama's shadow and make their own decisions and make their own way, that's something that they would probably be very much interested in.
Well, but if we want to be hopeful and say, like, all right, well, in a couple of years, Kirby's got things rolling here in Athens, then guess what? Then Auburn will want back in the West.
Yeah.
Saban's gone from Alabama, and then you've got, say, either Georgia or Florida are great all of a sudden, and then Auburn won't like it over here either.
It'll flip around eventually, you would think, just because that's kind of how it goes. You know, that the success and the ebbs and flows of how you operate as a program is definitely something that could change here in the future. So, yeah, it's just something to kind of keep an eye on. One of the other things that's been talked about there down at the SEC meetings down in Destin is this early signing period that's been adopted. And it's just a weird thing here because Brandon Adams on Dog Nation Daily said that this really does seem to favor the lesser team, so to speak, the teams that aren't as dominant in college football or don't put as much into it as other teams, because this would allow them to go ahead and lock up some guys, whereas with how it used to be in the past, you might always have that waiting until February. It's like, I don't know. If a Georgia or an Auburn or a Bama comes in, maybe I want to sign with them over Missouri. So the smaller schools could lock up those players a little earlier, and I think it benefits them. But for me, I'm not a recruit, Nick, other than the fact that, you know, we follow it around signing day and we keep up with what Georgia's doing. But it really does seem right now that, A, the coaches don't really know how this is going to impact things, and B, from what I can see, it looks like it's just kind of going to create chaos more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, because no one knows exactly how things are going to play out. And basically what it boils down to with a lot of legislation now is the adults in the room, the coaches, don't know if they can trust themselves to make sure that you know, they don't find some loophole. Like, you know, what Jim Harbaugh's been able to do over the last couple of years and, you know, basically create chaos. And I know Saban's point has been, you know, that's about a month or so less to evaluate a guy, that if you're going to rush and sign him, then maybe you're not evaluating him. So I see where, like, yeah, the coach at the bigger school feels it's going to maybe hurt because you're going to feel the pressure. I've got to get this guy signed now early, yeah, instead of having that extra month or two to, you know, to kind of really get your bearings and know whether or not you want him. But I even think from the player standpoint, you know, how flexible are these schools going to be willing to be if a kid does sign in early December and then all of a sudden you got the coaching carousel that starts spinning, and yep, then the assistant coach that he's developed a relationship with ends up bolting for some other job. And, you know, then the kid, is he going to be stuck there? Are they going to play hardball with him? Are they going to let him out of his letter of intent? So,
and that's the thing. That's the thing I hate the most about recruiting is people getting on these kids for, you know, going to play for a coach. People are like, you're committing to the school. And look, some of these kids were born, say, diehard Georgia fans, and it probably doesn't matter who the coach is. They want to play for Georgia. That's fine. But that's not every kid. And if you're telling a kid that has been talked to and reassured by a coaching staff and then gets the rug pulled out from under him, well, that's not fair. And again, yes, in theory, you want to go to a certain school, but the coaches are the guys that are going to be prepping you for the next level. They're the guys that are going to be on you. They're the guys that are going to be responsible for you, basically, over the next 4 years, in theory, of your life. So if a coach or coaches just up and leave, then why should a guy have to stick with that school?
I know. Well, I mean, I don't think that they should, but they signed that letter of intent, and I don't know how many of them or their families really, you know completely what it is that they're getting into and how binding that that is, where the school then has, you know, pretty much complete control over them. And if they can either choose not to let him out of it, and I guess the player could still leave, but he'd have to pay his way someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the school could let him out of it and then maybe place restrictions on him as to where he you know, he could end up signing with. So, you know, I guess if a kid understands all that and wants to sign in early December, then maybe he doesn't want the headache of, you know, being, you know, constantly harassed by other coaches and other schools and just wants to be done with it, then, you know, that's fine. I mean, ultimately, I'm like you. I get focused in on recruiting once the season is over and spend maybe the month of January really looking at it. And then, right, you know, you get excited about National Signing Day. I mean, ultimately, I don't really have a strong opinion one way or another for it. I mean, I just hope it doesn't completely zap, you know, what National Signing Day has become, because that's, you know, been a pretty fun day.
Well, and obviously, like, for a town here in Athens where it becomes almost like a mini holiday, I mean, it is a cool kind of once-a-year thing to have going on. But, yeah, hopefully this new one doesn't, you know, impact it negatively. I'll say this, and I brought this up many times on these airwaves before, if you will. Coaches can move wherever they want and whenever they want. This is why I'm in favor of a blank check, so to speak. Every single player should get one transfer, regardless of any circumstances. If they want to go one place, fine. They should be able to go, not have to sit out, not have to worry about it. Maybe you could put some restrictions on it in terms of where you can from a certain school. But other than that, if coaches can have this mobility and freedom to move wherever they want, I don't see why at least once a player shouldn't have that one opportunity if they decide that going somewhere else is better for them.
I agree with you. And, you know, I got to be careful about it. I mean, I wouldn't want a situation where you've got other coaches at other schools that might actively be recruiting them.
That's something you have to watch out
for. Right. And if you know that something is like that is going on, then that's one thing. But, yeah, I mean, if somebody asked me, would I be okay with, all right, well, what if Nick Chubb just decided he wanted to go play for Florida? I mean, would I like it? No. But if that's what he wanted to do, then – so be it. I mean, free agency hasn't zapped my enthusiasm for professional sports. I mean, no. The idea of players switching teams, and I mean, it happens in pro sports. It doesn't happen in college. Players don't have the don't have that luxury, and they don't have the power that professional athletes do. But yeah, I mean, if a kid thinks that there's a better situation for him at some other school with some other coach, then I'm all for that.
Well, and say I got tired of this job. And I wanted to go do something else. You know what I could do? Exactly that. I could walk into somebody's office down here and say, here's my 2-week notice, and I'd be free to go do what I want. Why can't, you know, these are 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. These are supposedly adults, at least as defined by
right.
by society. So why shouldn't they have the same freedoms?
Right. Now, if you find out, like, okay, Jim McElwain he's lurking around the dorms in the offseason and sending text messages. I mean, then you do have to, outside of, like, playing time, all right, well, what is Florida offering Nick Chubb? Or, you know, just as an example that all of a sudden he's going to up and leave. But, yeah, I mean, like with A.J. Terman, if he had wanted to go and play for Coach Richt, if he felt like that's a better situation, I'm buried in the depth chart here, this is the coach that I developed my relationship with for most of my college years. It's bad that he wasn't allowed to,
right.
you know, move on, even if Miami wasn't even where he wanted to go. But.
Right. And that's another thing, too. Again, what I was talking about earlier, you develop relationships with these coaches. You know, it's a lot harder to develop a relationship with a place or an institution than it is an actual person.
Right.
And so, look, yeah, if you grew up a diehard Georgia fan and you're going to come to Georgia regardless, that's one thing. But again, you're going to forge relationships with these coaches, and if they either get fired or decide to go somewhere else and maybe you want to follow them, that's probably something that you should be able to do. Here on the crossover on 960theref.com, Sam Franco, Chris Brame along with you. We'll switch gears now to baseball, where not too much to talk about with the Braves, really, other than the continued struggles of Bartolo Colon, who at this point – you just got to put him out to pasture, I would think.
Is he going to make it to his bobblehead giveaway?
That's what Dave and I were saying on the morning show earlier this week. It's like he'll stay through June 9th, his bobblehead day, and then get rid of him after that.
Yeah. But
it just hasn't worked out. That part of the Braves pitching staff experiment has not yielded any fruit. So it looks like he will be not long for the Braves rotation. But the big story really right now in baseball was the brawl that happened after Bryce Harper got plunked. And it's funny because this had probably the worst helmet throw I've ever seen in my life. Harper was trying to throw the helmet at the pitcher that hit him. Strickland was the guy for the Giants. Hunter Strickland. And it was just funny because you look at the suspensions that come out from this, and Strickland gets a 6-game and Bryce Harper gets a 4-game, which for a pitcher, and I know that he's a bullpen pitcher, but still, a 6-game suspension for a pitcher is much different than a 4-game suspension for an outfield player, especially the most important player on the Nationals.
Right. And I think they did reduce that by a game, but
okay.
Yeah, it wasn't a good helmet toss, and the punches were the punches didn't really land, but at least there were punches thrown. But the best part of that, and think about this now, Jeff Samardzija could have been a first round NFL draft pick coming out of Notre Dame. He was a heck of a football player.
Oh yeah,
but really it was Samardzija, and then the there was the other Giant. I'm forgetting who it was who I think used to play for the Nationals. But they basically came running toward Harper and then smacked into each other.
Is that Michael Morse?
Michael Morse, yeah. And Morse is a big dude, too. But, I mean, if Samardzija, I guess, had made contact there, but they ended up smacking into each other like it was a Three Stooges skit or something. But, you know, Harper might have gotten lucky there. But that's my favorite part of it, the two Giants that took each other out. That and the fact that apparently this guy Strickland was holding a grudge on Harper for 3 years.
That is what is so stupid about this. With baseball, and I've gone off on tangents about the stupid unwritten rules of baseball before and how it's okay for a pitcher to hurl a 90-plus mile-per-hour fastball at a guy, but what would happen if the inverse happened and the batter threw his bat at the pitcher? You know what I mean? It's the same thing. In theory, it's just obviously baseball has these unwritten rules, and this guy, like you said, was holding a grudge for 3 years. It's like, dude, let it go.
From a postseason where the Giants won the World Series.
Right.
And that's why I wonder how his teammates feel about it.
Well, you know how his teammates feel about it. Buster Posey didn't help him out.
Right. That was my second favorite thing about that brawl was how Buster Posey just stood there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I guess, you know, like most of the time I would think the rest of the team would kind of be aware that something was about to happen, but evidently not. I mean, this was just a guy. He was like, he was a lone wolf and had held this grudge for 3 years and decided to pay him back. And by the way, I mean, did you notice too? I mean, that had to hurt like crazy.
It's a 95-mile-per-hour fastball right in the hip.
Yeah, because the ball went halfway up the third, you know, the third base line.
Yeah, right.
So that hit Harper. I mean, guys have swung and not hit it that far before, but that hit Harper's hip and went that far up the line. I mean, I'm surprised like Harper really felt like even running out to the mound at that point.
And I know that it's really hard to judge intent sometimes, but if I'm an umpire and I see somebody throwing intentionally at someone, I'm immediately tossing that guy out of the game. I don't care if there's warnings. I don't care if anything else. Because baseball really does need to address this unwritten rules stupidity that happens on a really a game-in, game-out basis sometimes. But, like, the fact that pitchers, and they'll, you know, take the law into their own hands, so to speak. And even Julio Teheran, when he plunked Jose Bautista a few weeks ago for the Braves, it's like, just let it go, man. Like that, and that's the thing too. That game, actually, that hitting him jump started a great inning for the Blue Jays. It ended up costing the Braves the game. Basically, they ended up losing 9-0, and they scored 3 runs in the first inning, partly due to that. So not only is it stupid that you're holding grudges and things like that and acting like little children out there, but you're costing yourself games.
Right, and by the way, Bautista later in that game doubled off the wall, so I don't think he really had learned his lesson.
He did not.
Yeah, I mean, he doubled off the wall. You know, he flipped a bat, and you're just going to, you know, you're going to plunk him. Like, okay, he knew it was coming, and he went to first, and yeah. I mean, theoretically, I guess we all realize that the Braves aren't good. They're not having a good season, so what did it matter for a game in May to let it go? But I mean, that's what they did. They just basically decided, like, it was one out. He was the second batter of the game. All right, let's put him on. And the next thing you know, it's 3-0.
Exactly. So it's stupid that you cost yourself a game basically doing that. And baseball guy, you know, the guy, and when I say baseball guy, I'm talking about the guy poking away at his typewriter, you know, talking about the good old days of yore, Mickey Mantle and things like that. But baseball guy will tell you that's just how baseball is. That's how it's always been. I mean, apartheid was how it had always been in South Africa. That didn't make it right. Well, then this is just stupid. Like, baseball needs to get over itself.
And how, I mean, how hurt were the Braves really? I mean, if that's all it took for the Braves to get over that, was him coming up, I'm going to hit him in the thigh, and we're going to be, we're over it. Okay, well then, were you really mad in the first place?
Right.
Or were you just like playing out this fantasy that this is how justice needs to be handed down? But, you know, that was one, I guess, where both teams sort of knew what was happening. Mm-hmm. And Bautista just took it and went on to first base. And that pretty much was the end of it. So they let it play itself out. The thing about that thing with the Nationals and the Giants is I don't think anyone other than Hunter Strickland, and I guess Harper was sort of a semi-aware that I'm 2-for-2 against this guy with 2 home runs.
Right.
So the second the pitch came that far inside, nailed him square on the hip that hard, he immediately knew it was done intentionally, but I don't think any of the Giants knew what Strickland was up to there.
Baseball, just get over yourself, okay?
Yeah,
including Posey.
That was he just stood there.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. He didn't even help because you could tell that he was like, okay, this is a 3-year-old grudge. You're an idiot. You deserve to go out there and, like you said, there were punches thrown, but nobody really won that fight. But you deserve whatever happens to you, basically, is what Posey was
saying.
Then
he had, like, 3 teammates that were dragging him off the field, and he was kind of, like, you know, hitting them and stuff, too.
Oh, boy. Baseball, man. It just gets more ridiculous by the minute with some of that unwritten rule stuff. And it will continue to get that way, it looks like. But anyway, we will wrap up this edition of the Crossover with a little NBA talk as the NBA Finals begin. Again, we're recording this Thursday, so they begin tonight. So we obviously can't talk about any reaction or anything from a Game 1. But I will say that this series, it doesn't really feel like a lot of people are giving Cleveland a chance, and you can kind of tell that's getting under Cleveland's skin a little bit. Kevin Love kind of came out. It's like, why are we the underdog? You know, we're the defending champ. And I'll say this. I think Golden State wins this series mainly because if LeBron has an off night, then Kyrie Irving has to step up, and that, and or even Kevin Love. But there's just so many more options on the Warriors. I mean, you could have a huge Durant game, huge Curry game, huge Thompson game, huge Draymond Green game. Andre Iguodala could come off the bench. The last time the Warriors won the NBA Finals, he was the Finals MVP. So I just think they have more opportunities to get points. And if LeBron neutralizes Kevin Durant, that's fine. You've still got a lot of other danger men on that Warrior squad. Whereas on the Cavs, you just don't have as much.
Right. You know, now one thing you mentioned, the year Iguodala was the MVP. Keep in mind, too, Kyrie Irving got hurt in the second game of that series and was done for the rest of it. Plus, Kevin Love was already injured early on in the postseason. So Golden State ended up winning that series. Basically, it was LeBron, and there was no Love, there was no Irvin. Last year, you had all three of those guys healthy. Cleveland won the series. It is interesting that LeBron's only been a favorite twice in his now seven NBA Finals appearances. So here's another one where he comes in as an underdog, and I think they're gonna. I think Cleveland's gonna beat him again because I think LeBron does all of a sudden have a. He's got a chip on his shoulder when he didn't even finish in the top three in the MVP voting.
No, he didn't.
You know, he's first team all NBA, but it's like James Harden is the unanimous first team all NBA. And I don't think that LeBron likes Steph Curry.
No, they're a lot different. You know, LeBron seems to be much more, and this is from what I've heard and what I've read, LeBron is much more team oriented. He likes to rally around his guys. Steph Curry really doesn't hang out with his team. Like he's a family guy.
Also, so. I think that's another guy that won an MVP that LeBron should have won, and I think LeBron probably is holding that against
him. I mean, he went back-to-back as your league MVP.
Yeah. At least one of those LeBron should have won. Then the other one, Derrick Rose won that one that LeBron also should have won. But yeah, I think that's another one where there was this idea that all of a sudden Curry was the best player in the NBA, and I think that kind of needled LeBron too. And then he, you know, got him last year in the NBA Finals.
I'll say this. I've seen LeBron do some stuff outside of the one game they lost to Boston where he just kind of checked out and not really sure what happened there.
Richard Jefferson said he was sick or something.
Conspiracy theorists would tell you that he was sending a message to his team and to his ownership.
Right. Or that he wanted to, like, make Boston suffer or something by wrapping it up in Boston.
Oh, that could have been it, too. Yeah. But I'll say that I have seen him do things through this postseason that I didn't think were possible in terms of him being probably the best. I mean, I think this playoff run outside of that one game has been the best of his career. How's he doing that?
And I think a lot of it is he's motivated now all of a sudden out of spite. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, because it is just, I'm fine if this year Russell Westbrook wins the MVP. The guy had all those triple-doubles, and I do think he was on a team. If you take him off the Thunder, they're in the lottery.
Absolutely. I mean, they might have won single-digit games.
Right. I mean, they'd have been terrible without him. So this is one where I know LeBron's not going to win the MVP, and I'm fine. I think Westbrook is deserving of it. But there's, you know, those Curry years, again, the Rose years, there have just been, I mean, those moments when, well, there's other guys that are better than LeBron now, or because they kind of coasted through the regular season. I mean, if everyone just wants to measure the guy's legacy by how many NBA Finals he wins, then, I mean, how can we blame them if they, after the 82-game season, they don't show up every night?
I'm going to say Warriors in six. I do agree with you, though, that I think that if Cleveland wins, I'm not going to be shocked just because they do have a very good basketball team, but in the end, I just think it's way too many weapons for Golden State.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope individually the games are good, because last year, really, the series stunk until the sixth game was great, and then the seventh game was good, too. But They were Golden State blew them out three times. Cleveland had a blowout, and then Cleveland, I guess, beat them up pretty good too with that when Green got suspended for Game 5, and
yes.
That kind of gave the Cavs life. And then Game 6 was fantastic, and then Game 7 was good too. So there were two good games out of the seven last year.
Yeah, and I'll say this: hopefully, Draymond Green isn't flailing his legs and kicking anybody in the crotch this year.
He probably will. He's got a bad habit of that.
Yes, he does. All right, that'll wrap things up on this edition of The Crossover. You can catch us every week right here on 960theref.com. Sam Franco from The Morning Show, weekdays 6 to 10 on 960 The Ref. Chris Brame from The Home Team, weekdays 4 to 7 on 960 The Ref. Don't forget to check out Dog Nation Daily as well from noon to 1 on 960 The Ref. So we've got you covered here on The Ref. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be back next week with another exciting episode of The Crossover right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.